Welcome to the Uncommon Lives podcast, conversations for the whole woman. Here we explore different tips, tricks, and trends to make sure that you are out there living your best life. Join me, Asia B, as we have candid conversations with different thought leaders, as well as myself, exploring ways to make sure that you are living your absolute best life. Welcome to episode 3 of the podcast. Today's guest is Stephanie Hughes, and we are going to discuss self-care. Stephanie, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll dive into self-care.
I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist.
Okay, like marriage counseling, couples counseling, or do you just focus on like individual?
So I do both. I focus on couples and individuals.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what led you to that?
I think what initially led me to it was that I had had my own challenges with mental health as an adolescent and a young adult. And there sparked an interest from there to understand more about the mind and family interaction and interpersonal interaction. And so, by the time I got to college, that first psychology one-on-one class kind of sealed it for me. And I was like, okay, that's my path.
Wow.
I want to help people. And I never want anybody to feel like I felt. I didn't really know how to articulate what I was feeling as it relates to depression and anxiety. So it was never really addressed.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you feel like that is like prevalent, specifically in the African American community? You know, a lot of times from my perspective, we are like suffering with trauma, family trauma, just historical trauma. Do you think that it's just kind of like overlooked?
I think that, you know, unfortunately, there's just still a stigma attached to it. I tell a lot of my clients that are of color or and clients who are from a culture of faith that in our culture, we are taught by our ancestors to never tell our business to a stranger. And if we do have challenges, to suck it up and keep going. As a result, we are a very resilient people. So I take great pride in what our ancestors have poured into us. But I am a generation that has explored other resources, and I do believe that therapy is a resource. And so I really work hard to destigmatize everything that's attached to what people feel about therapy, that, you know, you have to talk to a stranger, that you're going to be forced to cry, that you're going to be telling people all of your personal business, and they're just going to be telling you what to do. So I work hard to educate and empower people to embrace it as a resource and not fight a resource.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That definitely makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. The reason why I wanted you to come and be a guest on the podcast is because the Uncommon Life really focuses on the woman. So many times we have so many roles, whether you're a mom, a wife, whether you're working as an entrepreneur or working out in the field, we give so much, generally speaking. And sometimes we fall like at the end of the spectrum. Like, so you hear a lot about self-care and self-worth right now. And I know you explore some of that with some of the lives that you do. What are a couple of things that you think would be good for a woman who's embarking on, like, she's overwhelmed, she's completely tired and drained. How can she start working towards either healing and self-care?
Okay. So I think the first thing that strong women should consider is acknowledgement that they are overwhelmed, that they have been doing it all and wearing the cape, and that they need to offer themselves an element of grace to to acknowledge that it's too much and that they need to slow down and seek some help for themselves, that they need to be attentive to themselves. Mm-hmm. I think the next thing that I would tell them to do after they acknowledge it is then acceptance that you can have both, that you can still, you know, nobody's trying to discount the work that you do, and it is very appreciated and necessary for the communities and families that you are connected to. But there is also value in nurturing yourself and making sure that you're good, because you can't pour from an empty cup.
Right.
I have not met a thirsty person yet that asked for their thirst to be quenched with a cup that was empty.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not how it works. So you have to be able to pour into yourself so that you can be able to pour into others. And then thirdly, I would just say that you give yourself permission to dissipate the guilt that's connected to it. Because a lot of times I hear women say, well, I can't do for myself because I got to make sure my husband or my kids are good, or I can't do for myself because I have all these deadlines to adhere to at work, so I'll get back to me. Mm-hmm. And then they never get back to themselves, and then they become resentful, bitter, and guilt, and feel a lot of guilt. So give yourself permission to not feel guilty because you put yourself into the equation of people that you care for.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, you have to be first. And when people hear that, they're like, no, that means I'm selfish. No, that means you're wise.
Yeah.
What does the flight attendant say? The flight attendant says, if in case of an emergency and the little oxygen mask come down, put it on yourself first and then on, you know, children or whoever you might be responsible for.
Right. Right.
So you have to be at the front and make sure that you're secure, that you have oxygen so that you can thrive and, you know, move, and then you can be of assistance to somebody else. But a lot of times, strong women have that backwards. We have adopted the theory that we have to give everything we have to everybody else. And then at the end of the day, there's nothing left on the plate. And so we say, well, okay, or we accept, well, I just had to sacrifice myself, and that's just what it is. There's nothing on the plate for me, but I'll be okay.
I love that. And I feel like you just gave like so much meat, you know, in that, mm-hmm. because it was like some mm-hmm. steps that you could do. But I sometimes wonder, you know, like, where did that even come from, where we feel compelled to just give to the point that we are completely depleted, which actually leads to, you know, sometimes mental health issues, like, because you are struggling. Like, I remember, and my mother has since changed her views, but I always reference where I was just exhausted as a mother and a wife, and I was just like, you know, I need, like, me time, like I need something for me. And I remember she said, it's not about you. You have a family, you have children. It's not about you until your children. And I just was completely floored, and I could not accept that. I was like, absolutely not. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that sometimes, like, as she has totally changed her views since then, because that was a long time ago. But do you think that that has something to do with it, that we are raised by these strong women? We are raised by women who, you know, seem to do it all.
And that, like, I think,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was asking, do you think that's where that framework comes from?
I think that that's a tapestry of it. I think it's definitely modeled for us. And I think it goes all the way back to, you know, again, our ancestry. I'm not to be all deep and wonderful, but since we're kind of focused on people of color, and that's the only perspective I can speak from because mm-hmm. I am a person of color.
Right.
But when you go all the way back to slavery time, our slave ancestors were, you know, it was work. It was get it done, get it done, get it done. And that was it. It wasn't any, you know, well, take a break or take some time for yourself. You know, you had people out in the fields that would birth children and still continue to, you know, pick cotton and work mm-hmm. for a full day.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything such as, you know, such as maternity leave or anything of that nature. And I think that that work ethic has gone through the generations. And, you know, our mentality is, again, we have to get it done. We don't have time to sulk or, you know, pout about it. We have to get it done.
Yeah.
And that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do. And then from a traditionalist perspective, you know, women are supposed to ensure that the household is ran properly. Mm. And that includes taking care of the kids, making sure you have solid meals, making sure that the house is in order, you know, everything. It's everything. And that's fine. But as we have developed over time and as other resources have been made available, specifically the layer that women can also have careers and be professionals, but they're still held to the same standard as some of our ancestor counterparts who were responsible for, you know, just home life.
Mm-hmm.
So you add to that a professional career and a desire to advance in a professional career, but still maintain this traditionalist value system, it becomes extremely challenging. And because nobody talks about it, when we see other people do it just on the outside looking in, they make it look easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't hear strong women. You'll never hear a strong woman usually say, "Oh my God, I feel overwhelmed," or "Oh my God, I have entirely too much on my plate," or "I feel drained," or "I feel resentful because everybody's pulling at me." Those are not statements that we make out loud. We may Right. make them internally,
mm-hmm.
but out loud, what you'll hear is, "I got it. I'll make Yeah. that happen.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. You know, it's covered. It's already done."
Yeah.
So it sends the message to, you know, other strong women. Okay, well, Susan is doing it, so I should be able to do it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that that is tied to our self-esteem and self-worth? Like when we can't make everything happen or, you know, and things like that?
Yeah, I think that goes back just to being a human. As humans, we have a desire, number one, to be connected. That is how we're wired. And number two, we have a desire to achieve. No human is just sets out on a path to be a failure.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is, you know, standing in line waiting to be a failure. But people go through different challenges, and sometimes those challenges just keep you from being the success that you want to be. And when you've been defeated, you know, so many times, some people do lose hope and you get discouraged. And so, you know, that too can cause just a perpetual problem if you don't continue to try to, again, pour into yourself.
Right.
The self-esteem and self-worth is you being intentional about pouring into yourself
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and reminding yourself of your value, of your worthiness, reminding yourself that you have a purpose and a calling and that you have to ensure that you take care of yourself to make sure that that happens for your Right. destiny.
Right. So I want to go in a little bit of like a religious and spiritual direction. And,
okay.
Do you think, and if you, like, whatever you think is totally fine, but sometimes I wonder if as women or as people who believe in God, in a higher power, that we sometimes accept suffering because we know that there is a greater place for us outside of this earth. Do you think that that ties into sometimes taking on too much and sometimes carrying those burdens and things like that?
Yeah, I do. I think that our belief systems, and again, I'm not just speaking of one belief system or the other, but I'm speaking in general. Mm-hmm. When we have some type of faith base, it's like we have, on one end, we have this level of optimism and faith that all will be well. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, it seems to me we've also taken on this idea that, you know, there is supposed to be some level of suffering and endurance, and you're not supposed to complain about it. You're just supposed to push through it, mm-hmm. and be optimistic and believe that better days are ahead. Mm-hmm. And that is true in one vein, but you have to put intentionalism and deliberateness with that to ensure that it happens.
Mm.
You know, I had a mentor that told me just recently, she was like, okay, so you get blessed with a blessing, but God never said for you to, that he was going to bless you to build a building, and then he gave you all the bricks, the cement, the, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. He expects for you to put forth initiative to get all of those things together to make that happen.
Mm.
So you have to put your work in and be intentional about making it happen. It's not just instantaneous.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I often think about that. You know, I do a lot of work with just faith, as in not necessarily religion, but in just what it means to have faith and how do you work with faith. And one of the biggest things that I always say, like, faith is an action word. Like, you can believe God's going to do miracles, as God does do miracles, right? But if you are not doing anything but sitting there waiting for a miracle, then God can't work with that. You know what I mean? Like, you have to get up, you have to move forward, you have to do things to show, you know, whatever higher power, you know, you reference. Some people don't call God, you know, God.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I always say, like, you have to do action. Faith is an action word. It's not just a belief. It is actually picking up your things and going forward to receive the things that you desire. What do you think about that?
I totally agree.
Okay.
I agree. I say the same thing. It's an action word. It's not just you standing, closing your eyes and saying, I believe, I believe. It's putting action behind that. It's putting faith statements behind that and actually putting the initiative forth to make it happen. It doesn't just happen, you know?
Right. Right.
Just like, you know, getting the degree. When I took the psychology 101 class and I figured out, okay, I know I want to go into mental health services, I still had to matriculate the degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was a freshman in college, it was just a vision.
Right.
And a belief that I could actually attain that goal. Mm-hmm. But I had to put in the work to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. So do you think
I just think that as women, sometimes that's the piece too. We kind of, especially in today's society, everything is so come quickly. Mm. And so a lot of people have this sense of entitlement and feel like, okay, it should just be, I should just get married, everything should be wonderful, my kids should be, you know, perfect, they should go to school, they should do well in school, and, you know, everything is going to be good. But no, you have to parent your children. And if you have multiple children, you have to identify what type of parenting style is appropriate for each child.
Mm.
Because it's not just, you know, this one-stop shop type deal. But a lot of times people don't want to do that. Everybody wants the fame and glory of being the strong woman, but they don't really want to do the real work that makes you a strong woman.
Yeah, that's a lot. That was a lot that you just said. So what does that work look like? You know, because sometimes we look at work as being like a physical thing, you know, and just, mm-hmm. you know, with action. And I think sometimes the work is, you know, releasing things, you know, addressing mm-hmm. you know, your own personal things so that you can free yourself to open up to new levels and new things. What would you classify the work as?
I think I agree with you. I think part of the work is setting boundaries, knowing when it's appropriate to say no, when it's appropriate to say yes to people and to things. I think it's also being in touch with who you are, so knowing your value system, knowing what you stand for, what you don't stand for, and then being able to be brave enough to use your voice to articulate that, that you know who you are, and be able to teach other people. Because truly, people expect people to make an assumption and just know how to work with them or how to receive them. But you have to teach people.
Mm.
But you have to be willing to do that. And a lot of times, again, sometimes budding strong women feel like, you know, everyone should assume how to treat them and how to be there for them.
Yeah.
But if you don't ever say anything, then I don't know.
Right.
If you keep telling me all the time, you got it, then I'm like, okay, well, she's got it. When in fact, what you need to say is, hey, you know, yes, I've done this in the past, but this time, you know, I have a little bit extra on my plate. I need a little help in this area.
Hmm. Okay. So communication.
Most definitely.
Okay. So let's talk about that, you know, teaching people and showing people how to treat you. Mm-hmm. I completely agree. But mm-hmm. what about if you're in a relationship specifically, like, you know, a long-term relationship, like a marriage? And, mm-hmm. you know, you get in the marriage, let's say you get in a marriage when you're 25 and you're mm-hmm. now 45, the person that you are at one stage is going to be radically different than the person you are, generally speaking, mm-hmm. At another yeah. stage, because you go through life, you grow, you evolve, you learn things. How do you then, is it just a constant teaching them, or how do you maintain, you know, that this is who I am now, this is what my needs are now, the evolution of you?
I think, number one, they should be able to see your evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, again, it goes back to using your voice.
Hmm.
And being able to articulate when things are shifting for you. Example, I've been married for 23 years. I got married when I was 27.
Hmm.
So I'm truly not the same woman mm-hmm. that I was at 27. But as life has gone on, I've had to say to my husband sometimes, specifically in the area of self-care, I've had to say to him, hey, what I need right now, especially with the type of work that I do, is I need a moment to just be in, you know, completely quiet. And I've even asked for a vacation by myself because I need a chance to just replenish myself. I have grown to know that about me, that there's value for me in being able to be still and be quiet. And for him to be able to receive that's the woman that I've become, that I've learned that about me and how I need to be replenished so that I can do the work that I do, because my work is unique. I carry people's burdens for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, there is value in having quiet time when I can really replenish myself so that I can continue to do the work that I do, not just for the people that I serve in my private practice, but also for him as my husband. And so I've had to articulate that and be very intentional in the way that I deliver it so that he could receive it.
Wow. That was a lot. And I feel like that is such an important perspective and statement, because sometimes whether you are working, you know, carrying, you know, people's burdens professionally, you know, as a mother, you're carrying the burdens of your children. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
As your parents age, you start to carry their burdens, you know?
Exactly.
And so I think it's important that you do take that time and take that solace. I think sometimes we get like really light and cute with the self-care, which I love a little bit petty. Like, that's a thing. But I think that we really have to broaden the conversation to just more so what is actually self-care. Sometimes self-care is a nap. You know what I mean? Sometimes self-care is silence.
Yeah. It's funny you would mention that. I'm in the midst of doing a training on self-care for some entities within the state. And so every place that I've gone, you can hear the murmuring and complaining as I'm setting up for my presentation. You can hear people saying, I can't believe we have to sit in here and do this. I have so much work to do. I don't have time for this. I know how to take care of myself. This is such a, you know, a wash of my day. And so I hear that. And most times people don't realize I'm the presenter. They think that, you know, I'm just there setting up for somebody else. But I like to be hands-on for that reason, because I really like to hear the temperature of the room, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so it helps me just to make sure that I present and meet what the real needs are in the room.
Right.
So with that said, whenever I start that presentation, I always say, I ask them, what does self-care mean? And most people say, oh, I get a mani-pedi, or I take the occasional vacation or staycation. And so my response is, self-care is so much more than that.
Right.
Self-care is being, again, intentional towards yourself and acknowledging the value of making time for yourself, honoring your value system.
Yeah.
To me, that's your gauge to know if you're really operating in proper self-care. If your lifestyle is such that elements of your value system are seen throughout the day. So it's not just that you take a day to go get a mani-pedi, because even that can be stressful sometimes, especially if they're asking you questions, and, you know, did you go to work today? How was work today?
Right.
You know, it's like, hush. But you have to look at what your value system is and make sure that that shows up in the course of a day. So, example, some of my top values are family, integrity, and creativity. And so those are honored in my day. I honor family by making sure that I touch bases with my husband, that I pray over him, that I tell him that I love him when he leaves out the door, that I, when I have a little break in the day, that I shoot him a little text and just tell him, hey, I was just thinking about you. Or, you know, if I know he has something rough on his plate for the day, that I'm intentional to let him know, hey, I acknowledge that you told me you had, today was going to be a little heavier. So just know that I'm thinking about you and I encourage you, because you can do it. You're a great educator. That's how I honor family. I honor integrity by being true to my own word. So if I tell you I'm going to do something, then I honor that. And then I honor creativity by giving myself permission to continue to grow, evolve, and explore the things that I want to do with my craft. So Like, I have a little notebook that has all my visions and ideas in it. And every day I either write something down or I go back and review something and kind of say, okay, where do I need to put this on my priority list? So my value system is honor, and that's how I'm intentional towards me, because my value system represents the core of who I am. If I honor the core of who I am, then I'm operating in proper self-care. Then I've really gotten the value of being a strong woman, but having balance and making sure that I take care of me too.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It's funny because I've never heard of that, but that's something I often ask myself. Does this add to what it is I want from life? Does this add to the person that I want to become? And I, sometimes it's the answer is no, and that's when I have to make, you know, a tough decision to say no. But that's one of the things that I do. I always, whenever something feels like it's going to be burdensome to me, because sometimes there are things that feel burdensome because it challenges us. And then there are some things that feel burdensome because it's out of alignment. And so I think tapping in and asking yourself the hard questions of, what is this really? Am I afraid to do this because it makes me feel uncomfortable? Or is this out of alignment with, you know what I'm saying, like my value system, like you were saying? So I love that. I think that's a great tool for self-care, because it keeps you in check. Speaking of self-care and things like that, I think it's important for a mother and a woman to show self-care. But what about children? How do you instill self-care in your children at an early age so that when they grow up, they kind of understand boundaries and things like that?
Well, I think the first way that you show them is by modeling it for them. I think the best thing for the best teaching tool that children ever have is what those in their village model for them. And so that's the first thing. And then the next thing is that you empower them to create self-care regimens for themselves, and you give them permission to have them. You know, sometimes when if parents are really driven, you instill in your children to be really driven. But if you do it to a fault, it also promotes anxiety and depression in children. So you have to know the balance, and you have to teach your child the value of taking a break, the value of having balance and not just working. You know, sometimes I hear parents say in the ninth grade, they're like, you need to be thinking about what college you want to go to. You need to start taking pre-SAT tests by 10th grade. And, you know, it's nothing wrong with being driven. But again, it has to have some balance in it. And they don't know balance unless we teach it to them.
I agree.
So, you know, like, that's why you should go to the park sometimes. That's why you should have a family night out or have family dinner, because those are all areas of self-care. Because you're teaching your children what is going to be a part of their value system. Their values don't have to match yours completely, but there should be some tapestry there that is similar, or there should be some commonality. And in order for you to have that, you know, you have to model it, and then you have to empower them and not impress upon them like they should feel guilty if they want to take a break sometime.
Yeah. I love that. Do you think nowadays the way that we've set up, you know, just the structure of education in society, that there is just too much pressure on kids? Like, what do you think about just, you know, like, they have to go to the perfect kindergarten, or pre-K so they can get into the right kindergarten. There's so many interviews and expectations, even from a 5-year-old, 4-year-old standpoint. What do you think about that and how that molds children?
I do think that society has put an undue amount of stress and pressure on, you know, achieving. And I think it's the parents' responsibility to find the balance that works
for their family, because every family is different. So I never want to discount that, you know, some people, their value system is education. Mm-hmm. And so they do push a lot in that area, but you still, you have to figure out what is the balance in that for your child. You have to figure out, or help your child figure out what is their balance. And that can be a really delicate dance, because, you know, you don't want your child to be lazy, but you also don't want them to be such an overachiever or perfectionist that, you know, that's just all they do. They don't have any social activity. They don't know the value of play, or, you know, any other type of community or interactive experiences. So I think you have to just be deliberate and intentional with continuing to figure that out and help your kids to evolve so that they can be balanced.
I like that. I like that a lot.
And it should have substance too, because, you know, I've also witnessed people where they encourage their children to be involved in community activities in an effort to prepare their resume for college applications, which I think is good. But it's not good to just sign up for stuff aimlessly because you want community hours. I think that there should be a discussion with your child about, you know, how do you want to impact the world? Mm. So let's find activities that allow you to see what that would really look like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from those activities, you can differentiate. Sometimes we go and we do things and we're like, okay, that's really not a fit for me, or that's not the seat I need to be sitting in on the bus, you know, as far as helping in different areas. But you won't know if you don't give yourself an opportunity to experience different facets of how you want to give back, if that's, you know, again, a part of what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Instead of just aimlessly doing stuff, just because it's going to get you some hours on your resume.
Right. So you want it to be aligned with their passion instead of just
exactly
checking
exactly.
it off.
Exactly. That's how you help them to really cultivate their passion.
Mm.
But, you know, you've heard of people, they go to school, graduate. Some people become doctors, lawyers, teachers, you know, all types of professions. And then when you get down to the root of it, because, you know, they start to have some challenges, and then when you get to the root of it, it's like their truth is that they only pursued that profession because their parents said this is what they needed to do, or they wanted to make their parents proud, or their parents had that dream for that profession, they didn't achieve it, so they pushed it onto their child. And then the child is the adult is then unfulfilled and feels, you know, just like they're not doing what they're called to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I never think it's strange when someone says they quit their six-figure job and went and did something else. I just say, oh, so they, congratulations, they were able to figure out what their real purpose was.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that takes courage too, because
it takes a lot of courage.
Yeah, because you're walking away from your comfort. There's such a strong desire to really make an impact and do the thing that you feel that you were called to do, that you're willing basically to give up, you know, your comfort. So I think that's great. How do women support their husbands, their significant other in self-care?
How do they support their husband?
Mm-hmm. Or do you think men just generally take care of themselves?
No. Men are the worst at taking care of themselves. Sorry, man. I think that men need just as much support as women. It may look different, but I think that there is value to supporting them also. I think many assumptions are made that men, you know, should have it. They're the provider. They're the protector. But I hear a lot of men say, I really would value my wife pouring into me sometimes. So again, I think you have to be intentional towards your husband. You have to know his love language, and you have to be attentive to that. Every relationship is unique, and every relationship requires cultivation every day. So you have to get in there and really work on doing your part to cultivate your mate and your relationship. Yeah, I don't think you ever get to this plateau of I've arrived. I've done all I needed to do to nurture this relationship. So now I can just sit back under the shade tree and watch it grow.
Right.
No, no, no. It's still everyday work, and it's hard hat work. It's not light work. You have to really get in there and, you know, get your hands dirty and be prepared to intentionally make a healthy relationship.
So do you think that everybody needs therapy?
No, I don't think everyone needs therapy, but I think more people need therapy than would admit.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that if ever you ask yourself the question, do you need therapy? Then the answer is yes. Because the fact that you're asking yourself the question means that something, you know what I'm saying, something is bubbling for you. And so you owe it to yourself to address it.
I like that.
I mean, yeah, because what will it hurt?
Yeah.
What will it hurt for you to go to one session?
What do you think you should look for when you're looking to just step it, like you're stepping out, your knees are shaking, and you're like, okay, I'm gonna try out a session. I think I really need to do this. What do you think you should look for in a therapist?
I think number one, you should look for someone that you feel you can relate to. And so you got to do a little homework to make that happen. It can either be by, you know, being vulnerable with someone that you're connected to, that you trust, and asking them, do they know of any resources? Or it could be you doing a Google search or a search on, you know, a couple of specific directories that specifically address the area that you feel like you might want to work in. And then actually researching that therapist and seeing what their platform is, what their personality looks like. Most people in my profession now have some type of social media presence. And so it gives you an opportunity to kind of take a peek into what, you know, what their language is like, what their energy is like. And so from that, you can make a decision. And I say maybe pick your top three and then go from there and schedule an appointment.
Okay. And how can people find you if they, you know, you've spoken to their spirit here? They're like, you know what? I think she's going to be the one that I need to get in contact with. I really just vibe with, you know, her thought process, and some of the things really struck a chord with me. How do they get in contact with you?
Go to my website, which is my name, but my name is spelled with an F. So it's www.stephanie, that's STEFANIE, QHUGHES.com. So StephanieHughes.com. Or you can reach out to me on social media. My social media for Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook is Steffi Sale, and that's spelled STEFIESAILS. So Steffi Sale.
Okay, awesome. Well, I am so grateful that we got a chance to do this. This was like you were like one of my top people that I wanted to get it, because I just feel like I love to, you know, just talk with people with different perspectives, but I think that yours is a little bit different because you are, you know, very connected to your faith. And so I think that's an important conversation as well. Cause I think growing up, we've come up sometimes where all you need is to pray, all, you know, so having, you know, a faith-based therapist sometimes can be, you know, comforting because it gives you, you know, perspective. And so I really appreciate, you know, your time. I really appreciate you giving so freely of yourself today. And I love you.
I love you also, my sister, and I appreciate you and the platform that you've developed for women. I think that this is an awesome, awesome platform, and I wish you much success. And to all the women that are listening or will listen to this on a replay, I wish you also peace, and I just encourage you to be brave and courageous enough to fight for yourself and do your work so that you truly can live your best life.
Yes. All right, well, I'm going to let you go. I know you have a couple of clients coming soon, so I thank you,
okay.
And I will talk to you soon.